guys, and welcome to episode 261 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, firstly, thank you as always for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And in this episode, I've got Elizabeth on, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. And in it, I talk to Liz, obviously, about her story, her experiences growing up, including the death of her dad and school bullying, her experiences of OCD, the fear of being judged, contamination worries, getting a diagnosis, hit and run OCD, what's been helping her, her journey for finding the right treatment fit, dealing with the discomfort of seeking help, the experience of telling her family, and much, much more. The podcast is sponsored by OCD Jacksonville, an affiliate of the International OCD Foundation and Natural Life. OCD Jacksonville have teamed up with Natural Life to create an apparel and gift range called Fearless. A portion of the proceeds goes back to fund the good work OCD Jacksonville are doing. Shop the Natural Life Fearless range collection at naturallife.com. Listeners of the show can use the promo code FEARLESS at checkout to receive a 20% off discount. Fearless, face everything and rise, a movement to educate, empower and reduce the stigma of anxiety disorders. Visit OCDjacksonville.com or naturallife.com for more information, or click the link in the episode description to go straight to the products. So thank you to OCD Jacksonville and Natural Life for supporting the show, and to you guys for listening as always, I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Elizabeth. On the podcast today, I have Elizabeth, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Hi, welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. And as you know, so if you want to share your story, OCD or otherwise, in as little or as much detail, it'd be good to hear that.
Okay, thank you. So I guess I'll start at the beginning. So I was diagnosed with OCD officially in 2009, 2010, around there. I mean, the symptoms that led me to seek that help and go for that appointment, I've definitely had since childhood. And anxiety disorders run in both sides of my family. And I can just remember always being afraid as a child, specifically after my father died. He was diagnosed with cancer when I was 5 and sadly passed away when I was 6. So my mom said after that happened, I didn't seem to want to talk about it or deal with it. I kind of shut down. And she had me talk to some professionals, but it wasn't until a few years later that I would ask to look at pictures or want to talk about him, ask questions and see videos. So after he passed away, my mom had me switch schools, mainly because I just wasn't flourishing. I went to a French immersion school. And after that happened, because my dad was the French one, he would help us with that homework. I wasn't doing well. So they suggested I switch schools. So I switched closer to be with my cousins. And once I got to the new school, I was able to make new friends, two in particular, who I'm still actually best friends with to this day. But however, you know, new kid, new school, there's always the risk of bullying. And I definitely got bullied as soon as I arrived, unfortunately. And in hindsight, I can see this had a major effect, and it definitely planted a seed for my OCD theme of, you know, being judged by others. I had gum put in my hair on the school bus, and I was called names. My mom said I came home from school one day and just sort of collapsed into her arms crying, asking why, you know, why people were so mean. And I used to have to walk through an adjoining schoolyard on my way to school, and there was these boys who would taunt me and yell things and make like inappropriate sexual remarks to me, which looking back definitely had an effect. And I also wanted to quickly mention your episode with Mara Wilson really hit home because her and her movies were just a massive part of my childhood. The movie Mrs. Doubtfire came out around the time my dad passed away. And I would watch Matilda. I mean, my mom says I would watch it on repeat. I'm surprised the tape didn't break because I would watch it constantly. And looking back, if you and your listeners, I'm sure have seen Matilda or read the book, you know, the theme is, you know, a little girl having power that helps her overcome challenges. So I think that's why it resonated with me. And my brother and my mom and I, we would have appetizer nights and watch Mrs. Doubtfire. So knowing that like her movies, Matilda in particular, bringing me so much comfort while she was dealing with OCD as well, just hit home for some reason listening to her podcast. So I just wanted to mention that. I thought she was amazing. But yeah, my main theme growing up was definitely the fear of being judged, having people not like me. And this unfortunately followed me into adulthood, which I'll get into. I think that we all have that fear of being judged, but mine became somewhat of an obsession early on. I was always afraid of gossip or about people being mean to me. The other theme in childhood was focused around illness, as I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. And it's interesting how we can look back and see how one seemingly tiny moment, one sentence or overhearing one thing can lead to years of panic, at least in my experience. So I had heard a story of a child, another child that had gotten picked by a hypodermic needle while playing at the park. And from that point forward, I could not play in the sand or go to the beach without being panicked that I would get picked. So it's still ingrained to me actually at this to this day, because I'm if I'm walking and I feel something like graze my leg like a stick or a sharp rock, I have to look and make sure that it's not a needle or something like that. So it's interesting how those themes kind of stick with you, even though that's not my main my main worry now. It definitely I still think about it. And then kind of shortly after that, I learned about bloodborne pathogens and I became absolutely obsessed to be very careful not to touch anything that might have blood on it. So I was worried particularly about blood. And I can remember for my 16th birthday, I had planned this Halloween sleepover and I was so excited because my friends were coming over and my mom had taken me out that day to pick out treats and things for the party and little gifts to send home with them. And I had picked up a pair of slippers at the store. And on the tag, there was this reddish brown stain. And needless to say, the entire party, that's all I could think about was, you know, could I have caught something? Was that blood or was it marker? Like, I looked at a picture the other day, actually, of that party. And you can see all of my friends are laughing and smiling. And you can see me in the background kind of just staring off into the distance with that, you know, panicked look on my face. So I spent the entire party sort of just panicked about what had happened. But yeah, I honestly worried all of the time as a child. I can remember staying up and staring at my ceiling fan, wondering when this worrying would go away, when I would grow out of it. And I can remember thinking, okay, when I hit my late teens, I bet you it'll be gone. When I hit my 20s, I'm sure I won't worry as much. And even up until my late 20s, I honestly thought I would hit 30 and it would go away. And unfortunately, we know that's not how it works. And one of my most common themes now, well, not now, but in my adulthood, that I wanted to discuss, and I'll have to give you the link to a TED talk, with, a lady that experiences the same theme, but, it popped up in grade 7. I was staying after class to discuss an assignment with my teacher, and out of nowhere, which is sort of how they happen, I had this intrusive thought, but for me, my intrusive thoughts were more like phrases. You know, a random sentence out of nowhere popped into my brain. And it was definitely something that someone in grade 7 shouldn't be saying, that I would have found very shocking. And I wondered, like, did I just say that out loud? Did I just blurt that out? And it just made me panic. And I remember going home from school and laying on the couch and just trying to catch my breath. And you know that panic feeling, that hot, cold, you're hot and cold at the same time? I had that and I was just ruminating over the conversation. And I called my mom at work and I said, Mom, you know, I think I said this to my teacher. And my poor mother, I don't know how she managed to say so cool, but, you know, because this would have been very, you know, confusing for someone who hadn't heard it. You know, she said, well, Liz, I'm sure, you know, you would have known had you said this. But the panic from that experience was so intense, probably the worst panic I had ever had, from that intrusive thought and the fear, oh, could I have blurted that thought out? Of course, OCD sort of put its hooks into that immediately, and that carried through. The thoughts that pop into my head are, of course, you know, the opposite of what we believe or would want to be thinking or what I would ever think of saying. And OCD, you know, being the way that it is and the way our brains are wired, it's always what it clings to, is what you sort of value the most. Fast forward to 2009, 2010, when I was diagnosed, I just started a new job and my OCD was probably the worst it's ever been. I ended up hitting somewhat of a breaking point and my doctor arranged for me to meet with a doctor who specializes in diagnosing mental illness. And I remember when he diagnosed me with OCD, the way he said it after talking to him throughout this appointment, he's just like, okay, this is what you have. So having a name for something that had tormented me for so long was amazing and very emotional. I think I cried the whole time. And what's crazy and very interesting, I think, is he had asked me, you know, can you say one of these phrases that you're so worried of blurting out? Can you say that to me right now? And I couldn't do it. I still don't think I actually was able to vocalize any of the intrusive thoughts. So it's interesting how we can worry so much about something, but when push comes to shove, you know, when we're put in that position, we know it would never happen. So I always found it interesting because he spent a long time, you know, trying to encourage me to, you know, just what is this thought that you're afraid of saying? What's an example of one of these sentences? And I could not do it. So I always found that very interesting because I was so afraid of doing it unintentionally. Yet when I was being encouraged in a safe place, I couldn't do it. So, and this particular anxiety caused me to ruminate over particular conversations for sometimes years in extreme cases. And it's unfortunate because I'm a people person. So it makes it very difficult. And when I'm in a panic situation or if this anxiety is happening, I'm worried about blurting something out. You know, I tend to analyze people's expressions, their facial expressions while I'm talking to them and make sure they don't look offended or shocked. I also would bite my tongue or the inside of my cheek right beside my lip as a compulsion to sort of prevent me, or at least so that I knew, okay, well, I'm not going to blurt out anything. I'm biting my lip, you know, that kind of thing. So you can imagine how hard it is to be fully engaged in a conversation when at the same time you're analyzing their body language, their facial expressions, biting your lip, you've got your intrusive thought, and still trying to carry out like a nice conversation. So it's very exhausting. And what's interesting is I don't have this fear with people I know very well or people I feel comfortable with. So for example, I don't have it right now on this podcast, but you know, if I didn't know someone very well or was in a social situation where my anxiety was already high, that's definitely something that I would deal with. And, you know, when this anxiety was at its peak, I would quit jobs. I wouldn't be able to stay at a job. I would want to quit. And I would always end up quitting, which I think was interesting. I remember hearing that people with OCD tend to be self-employed, and I always enjoyed being self-employed. And I think that just comes from the ability to control the situation as far as like scheduling. If I was having a bad day, you know, I wouldn't work as much, like that kind of thing. So there's a certain amount of freedom, I think, with being self-employed that definitely helped me. My other main theme that I actually heard on your podcast before was something I've heard referred to as hit and run OCD. So kind of just to explain, it could take me 30 minutes to drive, sometimes 5 minutes away. I could be going to Tim Hortons and it'll take me, you know, half an hour. So if I go over a speed bump or a pothole, which in my area, we luckily have an abundance of potholes, you know, I'll have to circle around just to make sure I hadn't hit anyone or an animal. And it's gotten to the point that I currently do not like driving at all. It's still something I struggle with. And going back to what I said earlier about, you know, really thinking that my OCD would disappear or I would grow out of it, it's been quite the contrary with driving. In my 20s, I used to drive around at night in the dark alone, like listening to music just as something to do. And now I struggle to go to the grocery store. So, and the other thing that happens is if I arrive where I'm going and I hear a siren, I have to get back in my car and drive around to make sure that I wasn't the one that caused the siren, which, as you can imagine, adds a significant amount of time to an otherwise quick errand. It should have, you know, taken 5 minutes. It can take me over an hour sometimes. So, you know, and it seems like, I think when you have OCD, you notice things, you notice coincidences, whereas I might not notice a siren if I was driving with somebody else. If I'm driving alone, I notice that siren. So I think our brains are really good at picking up on coincidences and reading into them, I think, a lot. Yeah, so, you know, all of this brings me back to now, I guess. I have an amazing support team and I'm very thankful for them. And over the past few years, I've definitely been more open about OCD and the different themes that I deal with. And it's difficult because I think, you know, those of us with OCD consider ourselves actually fairly logical and we're always in our heads, but you know, we know that these anxieties or these themes aren't logical at the time and we understand that, but it's just that tiny possibility in the back of our head, that tiny what if, that question, and logic just doesn't stand a chance against it. So it's just so interesting because I know logically, you know, how these things would actually unfold, but in the moment when the anxiety is so high, you know, there's no logic there. It doesn't stand a chance. So one thing I've struggled with when opening up about OCD is the feeling that people need to understand. They need to know what I'm going through and that OCD is real and it's not cute. It's not like a descriptive word for neatness or cleanliness. And I think, you know, you've heard it. People use it somewhat tongue in cheek to describe themselves. In fact, I think if you asked a lot of people in my life, you know, does Liz have OCD? If it's one of the people that don't really understand it, they'd probably laugh because I'm actually quite messy and unorganized, which I'm currently working on as well. But yeah, it's just so interesting. So when you hear someone say the phrase, I'm so OCD, I used to get very upset, but now I'm just sort of, I'm in a place where I'm trying not to let it get to me because I realize that it's not coming from a place, like they're not trying to be malicious. It's just a matter of the fact that they don't understand how paralyzing OCD really is and that the cleanliness and orderliness people experience isn't just because they like it tidy. It's a compulsion to a real anxiety. So, you know, I have to afford some patience to people and understand that they don't really understand what OCD is when they say that. But I think people are learning now more than ever what OCD is and how it really affects people. So I just have to accept the fact that the people that do understand, they get it. I don't need everyone to understand it. And I've been lucky enough that a few of my friends in particular, two of the ones I mentioned earlier that I grew up with, they really tried to understand when I opened up to them. They asked questions, they listened, and I'll definitely always be grateful, you know, for that. And the people that do understand, they try. But, you know, I've had some not so positive experiences in sharing too. A lot of, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners can relate to this, you know, don't worry about it. You worry too much. I had even heard someone suggest that OCD wasn't really a thing, which was, you know, it's jarring to hear something like that. Yeah. And I want to say, you know, believe me, if I could have shut it off, I definitely would have done so probably as a child and saved myself 20 plus years of anxiety. But again, you know, there's nothing I can do to, you know, make someone understand something. So, and that's okay because, you know, there are people that do get it and there's professionals that get it, which is most important. My mom has been like a rock for me. She's learning with me. I mean, over the years we spent hours, you know, where she would be reassuring me and I would seek reassurance. And now I know that that's not necessarily the right thing to do. So we're learning together and she'll try not to reassure me. So we're learning together how to work through it. And listening to your podcast, I noticed that I don't seem quite down, you know, down as far down the road as recovery as a lot of your guests, I noticed. So I have a habit of seeking help, but then when I start to feel slightly better, I quit thinking I can kind of take it from there, which in retrospect doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's also, I think, comfort with the familiar. So even when something is very painful, when it's all we know, you know, if we're very comfortable with it in a weird way, and that fear of change, no matter how painful something is, sometimes the fear of facing things and the fear of the unknown can be very scary. So I think what would happen is I would start to make progress and then I would kind of start to feel better and then just want to stop. So moving forward, I definitely want to keep going with it, not stop as soon as I start to feel a little bit of relief. And I've tried different resources. Around the time I was diagnosed, I took a course for cognitive behavioral therapy. But the problem was it was a group setting and there was about 10 of us. And it wasn't exclusively for OCD, which is fine. I think everyone had different diagnoses, which is fine. But you know, I think working one-on-one would have been more helpful at the time. There was a lot of arguing amongst different members of the group. It definitely wasn't a calm, comfortable atmosphere. So that didn't, I didn't stick with that. I guess I'm still on the road to finding something that fits, finding the right fit. But what's amazing is, and the reason I'm hopeful is there's so many resources now. And I think listening to your podcast has really opened my eyes to all of the resources that are available at a distance. And I think, of course, depending on when your viewers or your listeners are listening to this, you know, right now, I think a lot of people are doing distance appointments for a lot of different things. So, yeah, I've definitely learned a lot about what's available even at a distance. So I'm definitely still in search of the right fit. But I think the important thing is to keep taking steps forward, even if they're small steps at first. If you had told me even in 2019 that I'd even be on this podcast that I was listening to at the time, I probably wouldn't have thought that was very likely. And I think I mentioned to you at the beginning of the OCD picnic when we were talking earlier, I thought that was just so cool. All of the different things now, there's OCD conferences. I would love to attend that. I think it would be amazing. But like I said, in the meantime, I just keep moving forward and reading, learning, listening, directing my attention when I can, when I'm anxious, to something productive that I enjoy, like crafting or coloring. But also just sort of sitting with my anxiety, being okay with it, recognizing that the intensity of it will pass, and, you know, just like it has before. So yeah, that's my little long-winded story about OCD. So hopefully someone resonates with something.
No, thank you for sharing and for going into the detail. So you mentioned there you're trying to find the right fit now in terms of therapist, and you said some of the things you're doing to help you feel better, and working with your mom to kind of reduce the reassurance giving and seeking. What's my question here? I guess how are you feeling overall? So it sounds like to me you've made progress.
I definitely feel like I've made a lot of progress, but I know that there's still a lot more I could be doing to reduce, you know, the OCD that I still deal with. But I've made a lot of progress, and I think tremendous progress over the past couple of years in particular. But like I mentioned, sometimes it's just the familiar, as uncomfortable as it is, sometimes it's almost scarier to take a step in the right direction. Yeah. So sort of part of my goal for 2021 was to really make an effort and deal with the discomfort of seeking help and talking about it and, you know, doing the exposure therapy. I think my one thing, if I could go back in time, would be to take steps towards recovery a lot earlier than I did. But I also think it's never too late. So, you know, I think people take steps towards recovery at all different times in their life. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know someone in their 80s who started therapy for OCD, you know, so
oh, that's awesome.
It really is. Well,
yeah it really that's is awesome. It is never too late.
Yeah. All right. And with your mum, or just your family, for those that know, what was it like kind of opening up to them specifically?
Oh, terrifying. So my mum, I think, was the easiest one to open up to. We've always been very close. So I remember that one anxiety I described in when I was in grade 7, that was scary because I didn't even know what was happening. But I can remember always being pretty open. However, my mom said shortly after my dad passed away, I became very secretive and I didn't want to talk about feelings and things. Whereas now I'm very open with my feelings and talking. So I think it just took some time. So opening up to my mom was very easy, but for friends, it was difficult. I would say it wasn't until my late 20s that I actually started like sharing with friends and really opening up about what was happening. But luckily, I mean, like I said, the majority of them have been just absolutely amazing, really trying to understand, even if they can't put themselves right in my shoes, they can understand what's happening or how I'm feeling. And I'm always surprised by how much people actually do understand, and they don't think it's as weird as we think it is. You know, cause I think a lot of people to some degree have experienced different moments of anxiety or obsessions. So I think people can relate or at least understand what we're going through, I think more than we think sometimes.
I mean, that's a really good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They may not understand the intensity, but they understand
exactly.
The kind of rough structure of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that, yeah. And I, like I said, I've had some people kind of say the old, you know, get over it, or, you know, don't worry about that. Why are you worried? Why do you, so that can be frustrating, because if it was that easy, you know, we wouldn't do it, but it's not that easy. So I think, like I said, we just have to be patient with people and understand that, you know, not everyone's going to understand, and that's okay. I don't need them to understand what I'm going through, because I don't understand a lot of other conditions that people have. Doesn't make it any less real, you know, what they're experiencing. So, and I think OCD has given, I tend to be a bit of an optimist, but I think it's given me a gift in that I am now an empathetic person. I can understand, and I try to put myself in people's shoes, and, you know, I really try to understand what people are going through. So I think there's certain gifts that we can get from any situation. I tend to always look for that silver lining, but I think it definitely makes us more sensitive to other people and more patient for sure.
I agree. I think kind of compassion and empathy is very strong in the OCD community.
Very much.
Because I use the word bullied. They've been bullied by OCD for so long that it's kind of hammered into them empathy and compassion for others.
Exactly. That's exactly what it does feel like, a bully. It feels like it's, and it doesn't stop. It's like one of those things. It's like, you know, you can have, at least for in my experience, I've had moments where I'm able to kind of escape it if I'm watching a really funny movie or if, you know, I'm shopping, but it's kind of always there in the back of your head. So, you know, I've clung on to worries, one particular anxiety, and I'm sure people, if they're listening, like, you know, thinking about one thing that's worrying you for a week is exhausting. So a lot of us cling on to one worry for years at like sort of all the time. It's constantly in the background. So it's exhausting. And I think you're right. I think that's that it does make us more compassionate. So I think, you know, thinking of the good things that can come from any situation is important to me. So that's one thing that I think is a gift.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. And I think the key thing for all of us to remember is to keep that compassion for ourselves as well, and not just give it out.
True.
Okay. So what's next for Liz then, in terms of on your sort of recovery journey, if we talk in those terms?
Well, I think actually I've made steps towards like emailing different people. Actually, one was suggested and linked in one of your show notes. I can't remember the name, unfortunately, right now, but it was one of your guests had talked about they were doing distance therapy with somebody, I think in Calgary. So I took the step while listening to your show to actually email them. I thought that would be a good start. But, you know, I still have a lot more researching to do and trying to find the right fit. And I'm hoping to find someone too that is covered under my insurance. I'd like to find somebody in Canada if that's possible, but just the fact that there's people all over the world that can help with this, the resources now are amazing. And I actually feel sad thinking back to people in the 80s and earlier that dealt with this and had no idea what it was, but also that other people were dealing with it. Like I can't imagine, because I think one of the biggest things that have affected me in a positive way is realizing that I'm not the only one. I spent a lot of time thinking I was the only person on earth that had what I had. It's not at all, you know, like that. There's tons of people that deal with OCD and they might have their own themes, but this is definitely not just me. So I feel sad for the people, you know, way back that didn't know this. So I think that's another thing. The internet can be both, you know, very scary, but I think it's amazing the resources that we have available to us now and the information. Like I was watching a TED talk with a girl who was able to describe exactly what was in my head. And I was crying the entire time because it was just like that, oh, I'm not alone. Like someone else is feeling this exact thing. So I think that has been a huge help for me. So as far as steps forward, I think I just have to keep taking little steps that will hopefully lead to big steps. And I would love to, you know, keep, I'm never going to give up. That's the thing, you know, you got to keep moving forward. And expect that sometimes are going to be harder. I find, for me at least, OCD seems to come in waves. You know, sometimes it seems easy and other times it seems very, very overwhelming. So definitely just trying to find someone that I can work with, you know, remotely would be amazing. The other thing too is I work from home now online. And the thing is right now as we record this, everyone's social distancing. So I know that once social events start to happen again, barbecues, get-togethers, it's going to be a struggle for me to adapt back to, because I'm very comfortable on my own, just hanging out with, you know, my family and my dog. So to have to get back into the social settings, I know I know is going to be a challenge for me, but, you know, so it just means now is a great time to start, you know, seeking someone and trying to find someone to help me with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it will be challenging, but it will be good for you, I'm sure. And
yes,
I've no doubt you'll be able to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, a couple of questions for you now then. I use the word like biggest epiphany or biggest light bulb moment. So far on your journey since 2009 or 10, whenever you got diagnosed, has there been a light bulb moment for you that something just clicked on how you looked at OCD or understood it maybe or anything like that?
I would say there's probably a couple. One being just the moment that I realized that this is not going to go away. I could recover from it. I could definitely reduce the anxiety, but I'll always have to deal with it at some capacity, hopefully, you know, far less in the future. Mm-hmm. But that I always thought, you know, it would go away. One day I won't worry. One day I won't be this way, like late into my 20s. So I think just that moment of, okay, Liz, this is something that you have. Now you have to take steps towards dealing with it. And I've taken some steps, but like I mentioned, there's always that feeling of, okay, I think that's good now. I think I could take it from here. Like that kind of thing where you need to kind of keep at it. It's not something, you know, I haven't been dealing with it for a week. So it's not only going to take me a week to get through it, I think is important. So that moment of, okay, this is what I have. This is my challenge. And I have to continue to deal with it. It's not going to disappear. Also, I would say probably just in my research, even just listening to your podcast and just that recognition of I'm not the only one dealing with this, and people get it, like they understand, was a huge light bulb moment for me, because then it told me that I can open up and I can talk about it and not be embarrassed and not be ashamed and not be scared, because there's always going to be somebody that understands what OCD is. So I would say, yeah, those were probably my two biggest light bulb moments or epiphany moments. The first one being probably the most important, because I was just waiting for it to go away and not taking action. So had I come to that realization earlier, you know, maybe I would have, you know, looked for help a lot earlier into my 20s. So, but we can't go back in time. All I can do is like look forward and take the steps now. So, and my hope was, you know, if anyone's listening and they haven't yet looked for help, that, you know, join me in this and we can start looking together. And I know it can take time. I think it's easy to get discouraged when one treatment doesn't work or one person isn't the right fit for you. So, you know, I think because it's so easy to get discouraged, it's important to remember you have to keep going. You have to keep looking for the right fit or what's going to work for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. A good point. And there are more and more OCD, well, therapists who specialize in OCD all the time. So it's better than ever. So yeah, it's just like you said, finding the right fit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, you alluded to it there, but just words of hope for people who experience OCD.
Well, I guess just the whole thing of it's never too late. It's never too late to take steps forward. Mm-hmm. And just enjoy moments while you can. I mean, I also came to the realization that nothing will ever feel perfect. I think when you have OCD, you tend to be a perfectionist. I definitely deal with this in certain ways. But I think we're always like waiting for everything to feel perfect. You know, mm-hmm. everything, we're waiting for that moment where everything just falls into place. I don't know that that exists. So I think it's important to enjoy things as they're happening, you know, focus on the positive when we can, which I understand is very difficult, but even when I'm anxious, my memory has been very kind to me, fortunately. So when I look back at fun experiences in my life, I don't remember what I was worried about. I remember being very panicked, but I might not remember what it was, but I do remember the positive times that I had, you know, during those experiences. So for instance, if it was a vacation, I can remember, you know, that meal I had that was really nice, or that shop I went into, or who I was with and what we did. I can't remember what I was worried about. I surely was obsessed about something, but I might not remember at the time what I was worried about. So I guess words of hope is that it gets better. And I'm not even that far along in my recovery journey, I guess, compared to a lot of people. And I know that it gets better. So I can only imagine the further you work with it and you know, start to do treatment and exposure and acceptance and all of that. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how things improve.
Nice. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, there's it's a journey, maybe scary at times, but it's exciting in its own way.
It is. Kind
of, yeah, it's like a mystery.
It is. Yes, exactly. And that's kind of the thing, is you have to kind of accept uncertainty. I always, for so long, just wanted to be certain, like, oh, did this happen? Did this happen? Could this happen? What if this? And we'll never know. And I think, you know, that can be scary, but it's also sort of exciting. Like you said, it's an adventure, and everyone deals with it. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Next question is, if you could pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self, what would you tell her?
Oh, definitely to be more open immediately. Don't wait, you know, don't wait 10 years to start talking about it. Because that was when it was at its peak, I would say. And even though that's when I saw a professional for the first time really getting into, that's when I was diagnosed with OCD, was around that time. I still kind of, you know, was diagnosed and then didn't do much with that information. It was just sort of like, okay, well, now I know what I have, but I didn't take it from there. And part of that was just resources at the time. That was when I took that group course with cognitive behavioral therapy, which wasn't that effective for me. So I kind of just, you know, because that experience didn't work out, I kind of gave up. So if I could go back, I would say, Liz, like, you know, be open about it. Tell your friends now. You know, don't be so hard on yourself, and definitely start looking for something that works, because who knows, like, it's amazing how much can change in 1 year, right? So I can only imagine 10 years, you know, how things can improve when you really work at it. And it's difficult. Like I said, sometimes what's familiar is so comfortable, and really facing something can be terrifying. But to me at this point, you know, staying anxious all the time and ruminating and having obsessions is also terrifying. So you kind of have to pick which terrifying sometimes. So I think, you know, seeking help and talking to someone, being open, I think is one of the best steps that we can do, because at least we're moving forward.
I like that. Good advice. And then you got a billboard. What do you want written on that billboard?
Oh, you know what? I'll read it to you, because it's on my, I made a vision board, and funnily enough, I put your OCD Stories logo on it. So there's one thing done, but I put pictures of things that I'd like to accomplish in 2021. And on it is the quote, "Everything you want is on the other side of fear." That's been on my vision board for 3 years in a row. It's my favorite quote. So that would be on the billboard. Everything you want is on the other side of fear.
Yeah. Love it.
So,
I love it.
Yeah, that would be my choice, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I could help you tick something off the bucket list.
So. Oh, it was great. It's great. And early on, right in January. So, excellent start.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Okay. And then lastly, is there anything else that you wish you could have said or shared today?
You know what? I guess I could quickly mention, I have other OCD themes that I deal with. I think all of us kind of deal with lots of different themes, but there tends to be those ones that really sort of take the focus. But I'm very interested. I've always been interested in like Halloween and Sabrina and different things like that, like Oracle cards and the law of attraction, things like that. So I think there's like this fine line that I have to kind of, you know, be on, because it's easy to think, okay, my thoughts hold so much power and that causes anxiety. So, you know, if you think something, will that happen? If you think something bad, will that happen? So, you know, I've definitely dealt with other themes, like religious themes a little bit. I guess the one thing is that those main themes that I discussed definitely aren't the only ones. There's been other themes that I've dealt with, maybe, you know, less intensely, but even things like, I think a lot of people can relate to, you know, did I turn the oven off and on? So I'll have to take a picture of my oven just so I know that I didn't, you know, leave it on before I go. Things like that, for sure. It's interesting what OCD sort of clings to, because at least in my experience, it picks certain things, and then other things don't seem intense. And I always sort of compare OCD to like a filing cabinet. As soon as you file one away for a little while, there's one waiting right there, you know, another new obsession. So I would always think, okay, as soon as I'm done with this anxiety, as soon as this theme isn't a thing, it'll be gone. But then sure enough, you know, that's just the nature of it. There's always something there that OCD seems to cling to. And it's kind of like a tree too, if I were to compare it to something else, because, you know, everyone's themes are so different. It's like a tree with different limbs, and all the little branches are different themes and experiences that people have. So, you know, hopefully, I think even listening to your podcast, listening to other people's stories, while I might not have the same theme as them, I can relate to the same experience or the same feelings that they might be having. So yeah, I think it was just the one thing I didn't mention was that it's definitely other themes that I've experienced throughout the years, but it seems to have clung on to the health anxiety as a child. And it's so interesting because now of all times you would think my anxiety would really cling on to the health theme, but it still hasn't. So that's why it's sometimes not the most logical, you know, what it tends to cling on to. But I think it's just interesting how connected it feels to other people that have the same, you know, have OCD, even though it's not the same theme. I still can understand what they're saying and what they're feeling and what they're describing. Just an emphasis on the fact that you're definitely not alone. We're not alone in this. It's so much more common than I ever would have imagined, you know, when I was in my 20s. So that's been an amazing thing to learn. It's just how common it is. And I would love to go to an OCD convention one day. That's like my dream. Once we can safely travel is to do that. Go to an OCD convention. That would be amazing.
When the world's a bit more normal.
Yes, exactly.
I really like the tree idea. I mean, that's a great way of looking at the kind of trunk. The trunk of the tree is OCD. But then all the themes and thoughts of the branches and leaves and
little branches.
That's nice.
I think a lot of people think you think OCD, you think like we see in movies, is that, like I mentioned earlier, that the orderliness and the cleanliness, but it's so much more complex than that. And the themes are and everyone's themes, even if we have similar themes, sometimes they have different, you know, different triggers and different things that might cause it and different experiences. So it's just so complex. It's interesting. I've definitely learned a lot, even though I haven't necessarily spent a lot of time working with professionals as far as my own recovery, even just learning through your podcast, which is amazing, because I mean, just in your podcast, there's so many resources I've learned about through this, professionals that are available and books and other people's experiences. And you've had guests with artwork that they do. I was listening to one podcast, she did the artwork, you know, that was her way of coping with anxiety, and it helps other people. Like, it's just, I've learned so much when I actually took the time to research that it just gives me so much hope, because there's still so much information.
Well, thank you for now adding to that. You know, you're now part of that catalog, so
thank you. I hope, and that was my hope, is just someone might resonate with one of my themes or one of my experiences, and just know that they're not alone either.
Absolutely. Well, look, thank you so much for giving your time and coming on and talking to me. I really appreciate it. And
thank you so much. Thank you.
I want to wish you all the best on your journey as well.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. This was awesome. Thank you.
So there you have it. Thank you so much to you guys for listening. And thanks a lot to Liz for sharing her story. And don't forget, today's episode is sponsored by OCD Jacksonville and Natural Life. And to check out the Natural Life Fearless Collection, head over to naturallife.com or ocdjacksonville.com, or click the link in the episode description to go straight to the range. And a quick disclaimer, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.